Hi, this is Darren Rouse from ProBlogger, and today I'm interviewing a guy that I came across a few months ago now who has a really great story of a blogger who's relatively quickly grown a successful web business around blogs and ebooks. His name is Patrick Flynn, and you can find his first blog at greenexamacademy.com and his more recent blog, smartpassiveincome.com. And Patrick has a great story, which I'm going to get him to share with you today. So welcome, Patrick. It's nice to finally be catching up.
Such a pleasure to speak with you and for your audience. Thank you for having me.
And congratulations on the birth of your first baby.
Appreciate
boy.
Yeah, 20 days old, and I'm enjoying every moment of it, so thank you.
I heard him just a moment ago, and he sounds fairly awake at the moment.
Yeah, I apologize about that in advance. If you hear him in the background, he's definitely...
That's okay. My listeners are fairly used to hearing children in the background of my podcast as well. So mine will be home any minute now as well. So I'm sure we'll be visited by both of them. Can you tell us a little bit about how you first got into blogging? Some of the backstory, I guess, before you even got started, and why you started that first blog?
Sure, definitely. Well, I was first introduced to blogging back in college, actually on a platform called Zanga, which I'm sure you're pretty familiar with, which isn't really as popular now, but I used to blog during college about what I did just during the day, who I hung out with, what I ate for lunch, stuff like that, so that my parents and friends could keep up with exactly what I was doing. But after college, I kind of threw that out the window. I didn't really know about the business part of blogging or it could actually be done for things other than personal, you know, what you did during that week type of stuff. So after college, I actually went to school for architecture. I got a job in the Bay Area up in San Francisco as an architect, or an aspiring architect in an architecture firm, and I was loving what I was doing. You know, I had a 9-to-5 job, I was climbing the corporate ladder, I was doing everything that I was supposed to do, really enjoying my job. And then in 2008, the whole economy crisis thing happened, and I lost my job. And that was tough for me, but actually, right before I lost my job, I was studying for an exam called the LEED exam, L-E-E-D, which stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. And it's a test that architects take that deals with kind of green architecture and sustainable design and stuff like that. And during my studies, I was using a blog as a way to organize my notes because I knew it was a good content management system. And I was using the blog only personally to keep track of my notes so I can access them online at work, during lunch, or when I was at my girlfriend's house or wherever. That's pretty much the only reason why I was using it. But after a few months, right around the time when I got laid off, I realized that people from all around the world were actually using my notes that I put online to study for that exam as well. So once I figured that out, I started getting really serious with the information that I was putting on there. Everything was entirely free. I had no intention of ever making money from the site. I just wanted to help people out. But once I got laid off in October of 2008, I decided to take that blog and turn it into a business somehow. So what I did, the first thing I did was do a lot of research through people like you, through Yaro, and other different internet entrepreneurs out there who were making money online and trying to figure out exactly what they did so I can do exactly what they did. So the first thing I did was I put AdSense on there, Google AdSense, which I'm sure a lot of your readers do, and it was great. That's how I earned my first dollars online, and it was such an amazing feeling. But it wasn't enough to live off of, obviously. I was making maybe $20 to $40 a month, which is enough for a half tank of gas here in California, if that. And so I tried to... What I did was I looked at who was advertising on my site through the Google AdSense ads, and I contacted them directly because I knew I could make a little bit more money. Maybe I sold some private advertising space, kind of like what most of you guys do with the little 125 by 125 pixel ads that are on your blog. So I tried to sell some ad space on my blog, and I did, but still it wasn't enough. I was making maybe $200 to $300 a month doing that. But, you know, after getting into some mentorship programs, getting into some mastermind groups, I really got some good advice from people who were successful online. They said, you have a lot of traffic, you have people who are listening to you, whatever you type and whatever you post in regards to the exam that I took. why don't you create an ebook? So, you know, I was kind of reluctant at first. I didn't want to do it because I knew it was a lot of work, and I didn't know if it was going to succeed. And it was only after a couple emails came in from people who were using my website who suggested that I do write an ebook. So all these people were telling me to write an ebook. It was only me, myself, that was holding myself back. So I finally mustered up the courage and spent a good 2 months writing an ebook study guide. And after I launched it, that first month, I earned over $8,000, and it started growing even more and more after that, month after month. And I later launched an audio guide to go along with it. So I sold them both as a package at a discount price later on. And my best month was March of 2009, where I earned over $30,000 in 1 month. And that's just unbelievable. And I still, to this day, can't believe how I got to this point. You know, I consider myself one of the luckiest people on the planet. Blogging and doing what I did online and turning it into a business totally saved my life. I don't know where I'd be without it. So I have to thank you personally, Darren, for all the inspiration that you've given me, as well as all the other people out there who said that it is possible to make money online and who have helped me get to this point.
Such an exciting story to hear. To hear someone do that, one, at all, and two, so quickly, it is really exciting, and I'm sure a lot of people listening will be quite inspired by it. In some ways, it's probably a little bit abnormal in terms of the speed of it, but it sounds like you really got into a niche that there was a growing demand for. I guess that's a niche that would be fairly narrow. Is there many others writing on that type of topic?
Just a few others, but none of them ever published anything for themselves. There were some hard copy study guides, but no one really blogging seriously about it. And I was pretty lucky. Well, now I'm lucky. I consider my layoff something that happened to me. That was very lucky, a very fortunate thing that happened, because I was kind of forced to succeed. You know, I didn't have a choice. And I remember reading somewhere about you, Darren, and how you took ProBlogger to where it is today. I think it was your wife that gave you kind of a 6-month ultimatum to, you know, make it work. And I had about the same amount of time, 6 months before I got married. So I really, really tried hard to make things work for me, and they did. And yeah, it was probably a little fast compared to what most people have done, but I did have, kind of a countdown to when I had to have things work for me.
Yeah.
You know, it was nice because I always knew that I could get it. I could get it back into the architecture industry if I wanted to, which I see as a safety net, which was kind of good because I did a lot more, I guess you could say, risky things, like publish an ebook or start an actual business that I probably wouldn't have if I was still in the architecture industry.
So let's go back to the beginning of starting the blog. Can you tell us what was that experience of actually starting that blog like? It sounds more like you were doing it for your own benefit more than anyone else. But in terms of the technicalities of setting it up, what did you use? What challenges did you find? And how would you do it differently knowing what you know now?
Sure. How I started out was I did a lot of research on, you know, how to set up WordPress. So I actually bought a couple GoDaddy.com domains that I wanted to use, but then I couldn't figure it out. Their customer service was... Although it was good, it wasn't, you know, I needed to be walked through exactly how to do things. And it was very difficult at first. And it was hard because I wanted to get this blog set up for my study guide notes and stuff for myself, but I didn't want to spend too much time on it because it was holding myself back from actually passing the test, which was my primary goal at the time. So I came across Bluehost.com, and, you know, I came across them because they're the recommended hosting and domain service by WordPress. And they have a one-click WordPress install, which was awesome. So I basically signed up for a domain, went into, I think it was called Fantastico Deluxe or something, which now they just have a separate WordPress thing in their control panel. But you just go in there and click, you want to install WordPress? Yes, and then it's all done for you. And then you can go in there and just install your free theme. So I looked, the theme I installed was a free theme. Everything, the whole setup maybe cost just $96 for the year for the domain and hosting a free theme and just putting my notes up there. And it's crazy to think that just, you know, less than $100 created this kind of empire.
Yeah. Would you do it differently, knowing what you know now?
I would because, well, yes and no. I would because I did spend a lot of time researching how to do things. And I did tweak the theme a little bit myself, trying to figure that out. I have a lot of friends who are programmers help me out with that. And it did take a lot of time. Maybe I spent an extra month doing things where if I could have hired someone to do it, if I knew I couldn't hire someone to do it for me before, I probably would have done that. But when I think about it, I probably would have launched my ebook a month earlier. And, you know, at 30 grand a month, that's a lot of money. So, yeah, I probably would have done that part differently. But I did learn a lot of the technical part of it in the actual process of setting up. So if I were to hire someone now to do some of my websites, which I do, I find it a lot easier to talk to them because I kind of can speak at their language as far as getting everything customized for me.
So these days, I look at your site. It's beautiful design. Have you outsourced that now to someone?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about traffic. I don't know how much you were tracking your traffic in the early days, but have you noticed spikes in traffic? When did it sort of hit that tipping point for you? And what's traffic like today?
Traffic at the beginning, I wasn't tracking at all because I wasn't expecting that other people to find my blog. But as I had it, Google picked it up and people started finding me. So I did some research. I put Google Analytics on it and I put a WordPress plugin called WP Stats. Which was really easy and convenient for me to see how much people were coming to my site. And at the beginning, when I figured out that all this was happening underneath my nose, I was getting maybe 500 to 1,000 hits a day, page views. So maybe 200 to 300 uniques a day. And that climbed really fast because the whole green movement, environmental sustainability thing happened pretty fast last year. And I must have caught it right when it was starting. Because right before the year ended, I started getting maybe 20 to 30,000 hits a day.
Wow.
And then right before the exam actually changed versions, and there was a thing where people who took the old version didn't have to take the new one, which was supposed to be harder. So there was a huge influx of people taking the exam right before that deadline. That's when I saw my income shoot up the roof and my traffic. And that was in March 2009 when it said I made $30,000 a month. And traffic then was maybe, I think I hit like 1 million visitors a month that month.
Great.
Which is crazy because, I mean, I talk to people about what I do and they never even heard of this exam before, but there is a lot of people who are looking for this kind of information online. And when I go to different keyword research tools like Market Samurai or even the Google AdWords keywords tool, the numbers are there. So if you, the numbers do say, you know, what has happened. But it has slowed down a bit. The study guides that I wrote are now in competition with study guides that the actual people who administer the exam have wrote. Mm. Which is pretty interesting, but I am selling still, and I'm doing fairly well, and I'm living off of this income still, and I don't see it going down any further. And in my free time, because of the way the business is set up, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, I've been working on my other blog and just really getting into the whole blogging routine, into a blog that requires me to consistently post new posts. Because the Green Exam Academy blog, you know, there's only a finite amount of information I can talk about, and too much information would probably confuse people. So that blog is pretty much static. You know, it's reached an ending point. I'm on there. I'm on there daily, just answering comments and questions and stuff, and optimizing, testing with Google Optimizer and stuff like that. But
great. In terms of that traffic, did you do anything intentional to drive traffic to your blogs? Were you advertising? Were you just getting out there and networking with other people? What were you doing?
Networking was the number one. Definitely drove my traffic through the roof. I didn't spend a dime on advertising. Most of what I did and how people found me was through the different forums for architects. I would go in there and I'd help people out and tell them what I thought about their different questions about the LEAD exam, and they would see my little signature underneath that said, come to greenexamacademy.com, where I have free tips and resources for people who study for the LEAD exam, and I guess word of mouth just took over, because I think it was maybe 60 to 70% of my traffic actually came from referring websites and direct traffic.
Great. So let's talk a little bit about this ebook. How did you pull it together? What was sort of some of the mechanics of, you know, writing it? Did you just take content that you'd already published and republish it, or was it sort of new? What was that process like?
Well, that was the thing. Like, I was kind of scared because I had already written everything about the exam on my website. So I wanted to create this ebook. I was asked to write this ebook. So I just basically compiled all the information on my site and put it into a nice-looking, easy-to-read, organized format of a PDF ebook. And I obviously added a little bit more bonuses and stuff that I could that wasn't on the site. But, you know, I haven't heard any complaints as far as the stuff in your book is the same stuff as your website. Can I have my money back? I've never heard any complaints like that, which is amazing. And I think you did something similar with the 31 Days to Build a Better Blog, am I correct?
Yeah, it's probably 85% stuff that we put on the blog.
Yeah, I would say that it's about the same for me as well. So that was excellent. I was very happy with that. So it was basically just reformatting content on my blog, putting it into, actually I used Microsoft Word at the time, put it in there. I broke up each different chapter into a different file, wrote each one individually, then put it all together in a PDF. I think I had, I actually used the Adobe Acrobat Professional at my friend's house to put it together and just launched it.
What tips would you give bloggers wanting to create an ebook?
The biggest tip I can tell you is to first mind map everything out. Use some type of mind mapping software like MindMeister, MindJet, or even just write things down on paper, bubble diagram your ideas. Because when you're going through what you want to write in an ebook, there's so much going through your head. Writing it down on paper or seeing it on your computer helps so much, and it helps to organize the order that you want things. And even just writing it down, you'll grab more ideas of stuff to add into the book and add value to it. So from what I like to do is I've written a few ebooks now. I like to take stuff from the mind map, get that as detailed as possible, turn that into an actual outline, you know, where you can see the order that everything's supposed to be in. And your outline pretty much turns into a table of contents. Like it is your table of contents. And then you can pull each of those different chapters that you have in your table of contents and just treat them like a separate blog post, you know, and once you finish them, check them off, work on the next one. You don't have to go in order because they're different files that you write, kind of like a blog post, like I said. And then once you check them all off, then you have your ebook.
How long did it take you to put that together?
That one was about 2 months, and a lot of it was just spent actually trying to figure out how to format it and make it easier for people to navigate. One of the things I like to do in my ebooks is create little bookmarks before I launch them so that people can really easily navigate through the ebook. No matter which page they're on, they have something they can see and click on to navigate through different parts. And that was really important for the niche I was in because they're studying for an exam. So, you know, if they want, like a reference guide, check different parts at different times, that made it really easy for them.
That's great. I find a lot of bloggers that I talk to, they can sustain a blog for a month. They can put new content up, but the idea of, you know, a two-month project to put together an ebook sometimes seems a bit overwhelming and daunting. I know that's why I put off doing an ebook for so long. Is, you know, sure, I can write, you know, spend hours and hours and hours over a month on lots of little blog posts, but, yeah, this big project. So I found breaking it down into, you know, smaller bites was really useful. Have you had any pushback on, I guess, transitioning your site from something which was completely free to selling Have you had pushback from readers in that, or is that something that they almost encouraged?
No, it was almost encouraged, and people were very happy that I published it, even though, like I said, the content was 85% the same in the ebook as it was on the website. I think it goes down to that whole, you know, building authority and becoming a leader in your niche and becoming the go-to person for that type of information. And if you can establish yourself as somebody who knows more about anything, and I'm not saying you have to be an expert. Like, I wasn't an expert at the exam. I knew about it. I knew about it more than a lot of people. But there are, I'm sure, a lot of people that knew more about it than I did. Mm. But I was the one who chose to go online and tell people what I knew in a way that was easily digestible for people. And then putting that stuff into an ebook was very... You know, I think it was well received by people. I haven't really heard any complaints about it, and people were buying my ebook. And you know, like I said before, people were asking me to write an ebook. So it's pretty cool how that can happen. So it's just pretty much becoming an authority in whatever niche you're in. And I think that's exactly what happened. And I wasn't even trying. It just sort of happened.
That's great. So what do you use to deliver the ebook? The delivery method is something that a lot of bloggers struggle with as well. It too can seem quite overwhelming. You know, how do you collect money, all that type of stuff?
Yes. It was very overwhelming. But I knew that if I had written the ebook, like before I had finished my ebook, as I was writing it, I didn't even know how I was supposed to deliver the ebook. I just knew that if I had an ebook finished, that it was going to force me. So that's what I did. I finished my ebook, and then I said, okay, now what? I have to get this out as soon as possible. So I did a lot of research. I checked on things like ClickBank and even hiring someone to set up my own store, my own website, which was a ridiculous price. And I actually ended up going with e-junkie.com, which has been great. They have a free trial, and it's just $5 a month, and they don't charge a fee for the number of books you put up or any type of electronic product that you sell. It's easily integrated into your site, and I love it. Like I really love eJunkie. Like I email them every once in a while to thank them for everything that they've done. And their customer service is really good. They have forums on their site that really help people out when trying to integrate stuff into their site, and it integrates with AWeber. It has its own broadcast email service, so you can email customers back if you have new products that come out. It's just an all-around great package, and I don't want to be like a spokesperson for them here, but they gave me everything I needed to succeed with the delivery process, collecting payments from my site, keeping them on my site using the different shopping carts that they have, but using their software, and also just automatically delivering the ebook to the customer's email address.
Yep. So how did you decide how much to charge for it? It's, again, that's, I'm just going through the questions I'm asked all the time by people.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a huge question. And people ask me that all the time as well because, you know, it's such a big thing. And when I first launched my ebook, I wanted it to be ridiculous, such like the most ridiculously low price that people would be almost stupid not to buy it. And that is what I wanted them to think at first. So I priced it at $19.95, which is quite low for compared to all the other guides that were out there. There was nothing electronic. There were hard copy guides that were running between $60 and $100, and there were courses going for $400 to $500. So I was like, okay, well, here's something that tells you everything you need to know. It's only $19.95. How can you not buy it? And it was pretty good. Like I said, I had made $8,000 the first month. On a 1995 ebook. But actually, one of my customers, who was a businessman, emailed me and he said, "Pat, you're giving your book away. Why are you selling it for such a low price? I recommend upping the price." And I couldn't believe that came from one of my customers. But he was a businessman. He really appreciated what I did as far as the book and helping people out. So he gave me this little tip, which turned into like a $100,000 tip, because I raised the price 30% to 33% to $30, $29.95, and actually I ended up selling more more copies at a higher price. And that baffled me. And I think that the reason that happened was because the perceived value on the product was higher. So it seemed like it was worth more and more people were interested in it. And I always use this example. Like if you go to like a furniture store, a high-end furniture store, and you see furniture that's like, you know, between $500 and $1,000, and you come across this awesome-looking piece, but it's only $5, you're going to wonder if something's wrong with it, right? So that's kind of thinking that goes along with that. So I kept the book at $29.95 because that, you know, generated enough income for me to have my business running really well. And I also threw in an audio guide, like I said, which I actually outsourced. The story with that was I for a couple days I tried doing it entirely myself. I scripted out some different chapters and I tried reading them myself. And after 2 days, I was over it. You know, I said like after every sentence and like, you know, I'm from California, so I say like a lot. And that was just terrible. So I ended up spending some of my money that I made from the ebook on a voice talent. So I spent, I think it was $1,200, which is a ridiculous amount of money for me. I never spent that much money on having someone read something that I can read. But, you know, they did an excellent job. They sounded professional. The sound quality was amazing. And I packaged that together with my guide. And I sold that for $29.95 separately. But with the guide, I sold it for, I think, $44.95. So it's still pretty cheap. But those were the prices that I think worked really well with me in the industry. And now other players have come along in the industry selling stuff, and I still seem to be on the low end. And it makes me wonder if I could have made more. I don't want to be greedy, but at the same time, I want to be smart. I want to be a smart businessman. So I think if I could go back and do it again, I would keep testing the price, maybe do some split testing with Google Optimizer or run maybe a month-long campaign at a higher price and see what happens. Where it's at now, I'm okay with it at the price that it's at. But yeah, pricing something is definitely a hard thing to do. And my recommendation would be to, if you have competitors out there, see what they're pricing at so you can kind of get an idea of what people might be paying for it. Then you want to go higher or lower than them based on what you have to offer. You know, if you want to go a lower price than your competitor, then you're going to have to make that prominent in your sales letters or whatever. And if you want to go higher, you have to tell them why people are going to want to buy your things, which are at a higher price compared to other people. You got to tell them why they would want to do that.
Great. So with this audio version, I'm fascinated by that because it's something that I've been asked to do a bit myself lately. What sort of split have you had in terms of sales, in terms of people just buying the ebook, buying just the audio, or buying just the package of both of them? Has it been worthwhile doing that audio?
Oh, gosh, yes. the audio, having the audio in there is awesome because having that package deal in there where, you know, you sell them both separately at a certain price, but at a discount price, they get both together, that just, you know, that screams sale. And people, whenever they see sale, they just go crazy for it, even if they don't need it. You know, it's a sale, so they got to buy it. And just having that there gives people the option of paying a little bit more for and getting a little bit more value. And especially for something like an exam that they need to study for, people are willing to spend money for something that is going to help them pass a test. So they're going to want as much stuff as possible. So the breakdown, I think, I went through this once a while ago. I think it was like 70% of the people bought the package of both the ebook and the audio guide. 20% would buy the ebook by itself, or maybe even 25% and would buy the ebook by itself, and then 5% just bought the audio alone.
Great. I noticed also on your sales page you're recommending other products. Are you doing some affiliate marketing there?
I am doing some affiliate marketing, yes. That's been actually going really well, especially with the parts that I sell practice exams to for another company as well. And those are basically just hop links that go over to their site. And then I get an affiliate commission off of that as well. And that's kind of just my way of adding even more products to my line, if you will.
Mm.
But they aren't actually mine.
Because I actually look really integrated into the site and presented quite similarly to your own. So it sort of looks like it extends your own line, which is quite good in some ways. Do you offer an affiliate program to others to promote your guides?
I do. eJunkie has its built-in affiliate program. I do have 3 or 4 people promoting for me, and it's very minimal. I maybe get 5 to 10 sales a month from them. It's hard because the people in this industry aren't selling things online or don't have blogs or don't have websites where they can help me out in that way. For something like yearbook, for instance, there's a million blogs out there a million other bloggers out there who are willing, who read what you read and are willing to share that with their readers and have a means to do that, or medium to do that.
Your sales pages are really like the way you've designed them. They're not over the top like some sales pages, but they're not tiny. So you've obviously gone somewhere between, you know, the typical massive long hyped up sales pages and those that are so minimal that they barely sell. Any tips that you've learnt along the way in terms of, you know, getting that sales page right?
My biggest step is just to test, split test as much as you can. It's funny because that was the first sales page I put up, and it came directly from Yannick Silver's book, Moonlighting on the Internet, which has a template sales page that you can use. And that's exactly where that came from, the step-by-step everything. So I put that on there, and I actually had some other people suggest that I have one of those really long sales pages. So I did that as well, and I put that on there, and I split-tested them side-by-side. And that one, the first one I did that came from Yannick Silver's book, just totally outperformed for some reason. I don't know. You know, it's hard because many of us look at those really long ones and we wonder, how can those possibly sell anything because they're so long? And are people going to read that, really? So maybe they do. The way you figure that out is to split test. But I found that this shorter version isn't as scary. And, you know, a lot of people who are looking for the type of product that I have to offer probably don't have time to read all that stuff, so they want something that tells them exactly what they're going to get up front, how much it is, and they want a sneak peek of what it looks like inside as well. So that's what I have on there.
That's great. It's well worth looking out for. So if you're going to greenexamacademy.com, just click on the study guides and then click on, you know, some of the products that you see there, and it will take you through to what I think is quite a good. It's got some definite call to actions, and lots of examples of what's in the ebook as well. So it's very nicely put together. I noticed on your site in your navigation area you've got classes, something coming in 2010. What's going on there?
Oh, classes. I'm also an affiliate for companies who do live courses.
Mm-hmm.
So basically that would be a spot for me to place an affiliate link for people who are interested in taking live classes.
Yep.
The people I'm affiliates with have not yet given me their 2010 schedule, which is why it's blank right now.
Right.
But as far, you know, that brings up another thing. In the future, I was planning to do maybe some of my own, you know, kind of courses online off of this blog, which is maybe the next step for me, I think.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. It would seem like almost logical to have some sort of a webinar or some sort of coaching type product.
Yeah, I would love to do that. I'm still, you know, honestly, I'm still getting over a minor fear of speaking on the microphone and, you know, showing myself online and stuff like that. So I'm really trying to put myself out there lately. On my other blog, I've been practicing by doing some videos, and I'm also going to be setting up a podcast soon. So kind of just forcing myself to get used to speaking and stuff like that, I can get comfortable with it, because totally not comfortable, if you can't tell.
Oh, you're doing well. I think you'd be natural. Do you, you mentioned before on this site particularly, you're not really adding much more content to that, to it. Is that having any negative impact on the site, do you think, or is it just...
Yeah, the only negative part behind it, I think, and I do update it every once in a while when I hear new information about the exam, and I do have an email list on there that I send new information out to anyway, so I'm still connecting with the readers, but there's a couple bad things about having a static site like this. One is you don't get that relationship that happens when you're constantly giving information to people like every other day or every day like you do or like I do in my other blog. And secondly, the rankings in Google go down because, you know, the site's not as active and people aren't linking to it as much. People aren't coming over as much. And there just isn't more content for Google to crawl through.
You're using a newsletter there. What are you using that for? Is that... just giving updates, or is it more promotional? Have you got an autoresponder type thing set up there?
Yeah, there's an autoresponder type thing on there. It basically takes people through this through a quick step-by-step process of what they need in order to pass the exam. So it has some content on there, and it has a little bit of promotional items as far as clicking over to where my study guides are located, the kind of practice exams people can take, which are obviously affiliate links and stuff like that. But... you know, I do use it to broadcast as well when there are different updates and stuff, because the industry is changing a lot, especially with all the new technology that's coming out, and the exam will be affected by it. So this is my way of just being able to connect with people a little more personally through their email address.
I guess in some ways you've got a slightly different audience to many bloggers in that you've got people who are on your blog for a period of time and then they don't really have too much reason to continue.
That's actually the reason why I did not do a membership website, which was suggested to me by a number of people back in the day. You know, if I had a membership website, you know, once people pass the exam, they're kind of done with it, so they wouldn't stick around anymore.
Have you ever thought of a second site that perhaps explores similar topics, but is for people who are your alumni in effect?
Yeah, I was actually... thinking about that, although the problem with that is I don't know as much about that type of information, so it would be a little bit more difficult for me to set up, but I obviously could get people involved with that, and there have been a few that have sprung up that are very similar to what you just described.
Yep. So I noticed you've one of your most popular articles on smartpassiveincome.com is an article you wrote about Facebook and how you're using Facebook to promote your business. Can you talk us about some of the tips, I guess, that you would have for bloggers wanting to use Facebook? I know a lot of bloggers go more to Twitter for some reason and really struggle to get much traction on Facebook. What have you learned there?
Facebook is definitely a really cool tool that bloggers should definitely look into. I wouldn't throw everything else out the window and go to Facebook, because what you have going now is probably working for you. But definitely look into it as a different way to connect with your audience. And that's probably the best part about it. It, as far as a traffic generation tool, it's, you know, Twitter is still a lot easier in that respect, but the interactions you can have with your audience is far superior than Twitter or even the comment section on your blog. You know, you can hold multiple conversations at the same time and different people can jump in. The record of the actual conversation is still there, and you can insert links and video responses and all this really cool stuff, which is why I really like to use it. But the article actually starts off by talking about, it's called The Blogger's Guide to Facebook, and it's basically everything that I did on Facebook to help my business for both the Smart Passive Income blog and Green Exam Academy. And basically, first it goes through telling you the statistics behind Facebook, which is ridiculous. I think there are almost maybe 400 million people on Facebook now. I know there's at least 300 million. And the age group that is actually growing the fastest are people, I think, between the ages of 25 and 35, who are people with money, obviously, who are very active. People who were on Facebook when it first started, they're still there, and they're there too. So So for Facebook, you know, that there's a problem with trying to divide your personal part, you know, the family and friends part of Facebook with the business part. So you can start what's called a Facebook fan page, a Facebook page. And this is a totally separate thing that acts just like a separate personal account where you can have fans instead of friends and you can speak to them, you can post things, you can post status updates on your business or fan page, and those things get posted on everyone who's your fan. They get to see what you have to say on their wall. It gets posted on them real time. So one tip I have is that after you set up your fan page, you definitely have to have a Facebook landing page. This is super important. And yes, you can have a landing page on Facebook. So if you go into Facebook, and I have instructions for this on my website, but if you go into Facebook and you put in an application called FBML Static, you can put in some code in there to set it up so that people who come to your Facebook page for the first time land on that page first. So what you do on that landing page is you tell people exactly what they should do, which is become a fan. So you can have a little arrow that clicks up to the top that says click here to become a fan. You can tell people who you are, what you're about, and why they should become a fan. If you don't do that, people who come to your fan page for the first time are just going to come to your wall. And it's going to be, the wall doesn't really do a good job of telling people what to do or how to become a fan. You know, there is that button at the top, but there's no calls to actions, and there's a lot of information on the wall with different conversations. People might get kind of overwhelmed and just leave. So I found that by adding the landing page, you'll actually increase your conversions as far as fans 40 to 50%. It's ridiculous. Mm. And you can also even put in opt-in forms for your email lists on that page and what have you. But it's been really helpful. And there are applications you can do or that you can add to your Facebook page as well, such as like a Twitter application or an RSS feed for your blog or, you know, a YouTube application that connects with your YouTube account so that everything gets syndicated to your Facebook page and your fans can see everything that you're posting up on all the sites that you're on.
That's great. I recommend checking out that article. It's on smartpassiveincome.com. Also worth checking out on your site is a free book on ebooks, which sort of talks you through a lot of the stuff that we've explored earlier in this podcast. So, Yeah, I read it through last night. There's some really good stuff on there and a few things that I'm going to go and implement on my own ebooks. So I think we might leave it there. If people do want to check out more about Patrick, you can check out his two blogs, greenexamacademy.com, which is the lead exam blog that has become a six-figure blog through his ebooks, and smartpassiveincome.com, which is updated fairly regularly on this sort of topic, on talking about how to build passive income online in particular. So any parting tips for bloggers who might be listening to this, Patrick, who are a little bit inspired by your story and want to go away and do some of this for themselves?
Sure. I think the number one thing I have to say is just in order to get to that next level, you're going to have to take bold actions. You know, we get stuck in this kind of routine sometimes where we're on like a schedule where we're doing things that may not be as productive, or maybe they are productive, but they aren't just taking you to that next level. So take bold actions, do something that's out of the norm that's going to take your blog to the next level, such as writing an ebook or maybe connecting with that blogger, that top blogger who's going to help you, you know, answer some of your questions and maybe post like one of your guest posts or starting a membership website. You know, these bold actions are what the big wins, as they say, that help you get to that next level.
That's great. And some fantastic parting words. So thank you for your time today, Patrick.
Thank you, Dan. I really appreciate it.
And where can people get you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Pat Flynn, PatFlynnn. And you can also find me on facebook.com/smartpassiveincome.
Great. Thanks for your time today, Patrick.
Thank you. Appreciate it.